Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast. Our hot topic today, British royalty? No, we're not touching that. My son Ben's going to be over there saying, Scottish independence! Let's not talk that English nonsense! Yes, we will not be taking some bets today on who the anonymous racist in the royal family is. But the whole spectacle we've seen here, we just have one point. This just shows you all over again that the media are all in favor of wealthy global elites as long as they're as progressive as Oprah. So instead, today I'd like to talk briefly about terminology, the lingo that the news media uses, and how it's subtle, but it's important. And you could see it right now, in which we've been discussing that the Congress is going to pass, quote unquote, a COVID relief package, a COVID relief bill. And you can ask yourself the question, as Republicans have been asking, is it accurate to call something a COVID bill when COVID's a minority of the spending? Certainly the actual disease fighting part of it is small. I believe there was 9% of it that was about the vaccines or and that material. Obviously, there's other economic things there, the quote-unquote stimulus checks, the expansion of unemployment benefits. But to call it a COVID relief bill is sort of hiding what seems to be the majority of the bill. When they're running around saying that this bill is the most progressive piece of legislation since Obamacare, or maybe since the Great Society, then it's not just a COVID bill. But they love the terminology they use here, because then they can run around and say, and today Republicans opposed COVID relief. John Avlon on CNN's going full Biden propagandist, doing a whole segment on what Biden calls the American Rescue Plan. Joe Biden is in favor of an American rescue. Republicans, they're Snidely Whiplash, if you remember the old cartoon. They're against an American rescue. The media does this all the time. Whatever the Democrats call their legislation, they're going to call it something really positive and then say the Republicans are against that positive. So one of the other bills that's going around right now is called the Equality Act. It's not called the Crushing Religious Freedom Act, because that just doesn't sound great. This is a bill that groups like the Family Research Council are very concerned are going to treat churches as what they call public accommodations, because churches host events like weddings. So then churches are not going to be allowed to quote unquote discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. Well, that's called the Crush Religious Freedom Act. But of course, they want to say, conservatives oppose the Equality Act. Those villains. Then there's H.R. 1. This is all about federalizing elections, taking all the power for supervising elections away from states and cities and letting the national government run everything. Yeah, their title for that one is the For the People Act. And of course, the news media, when they discuss this or Biden's recent executive order, they use terms like this. President Biden today issued an executive order expanding voting access. Oh, that sounds lovely. He's not going to say, President Biden today said, you don't have to bring an ID to the polls. We don't care. Vote twice. Vote five times. We're not going to check. Instead, we get what they always say. This is one of their Qui-Gon Jinn mantras. There is no widespread voter fraud. There is no widespread voter fraud. You can look at congressional races just in this last cycle and say you don't need widespread voter fraud to change results. Remember the House race in Iowa? The new congresswoman there, Mary Annette Miller Meeks, won by 6, certified 6 votes. Now that's the kind of result that if you're trying to encourage your friends and neighbors to turn out to the polls, that would tell them this is not a waste of your time. She won by 6. Can you imagine losing by 6? I mean, that's got to be especially bitter. The New York race with Claudia Tenney, I believe the final margin in that race was 109. She won by a margin of 109 votes when all the votes were counted. And recounted in this case. That one went on for quite a long time before they actually called that race. That was the last House race to be called. So if a race comes down to being about 109 votes, the voter fraud would not have to be quote-unquote widespread to matter. But this is the way the news media talk. And this is the way the news media have used this advantage for decades. I mean, basically since they put the news on television, you think of all the great progressive legislation, you know, great in quotes. Just the whole term. And now the great society. Who opposes the great society? Who opposes the Civil Rights Act? Who opposes the Voting Rights Act? Obviously, it really doesn't matter if you have a reasonable objection because we can basically cast you as anti-civil rights, anti-voting rights, in a word, racist. Then, of course, there's the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. You have a puddle on your property, we're going to shut your farm down because we're for the Clean Water Act. So this is what we're having now. The media also use more generic terms like the stimulus bill. Why are Republicans opposed to stimulus? And then they go out and do polls. CBS did a poll. I guess CNN's probably doing a poll. And then they talk about this COVID relief bill is enormously popular. Well, that's because you go out to voters and you say, are you in favor of COVID relief? What are they going to say? No, I'm in favor of COVID. I mean, what, you know, are you in favor of federal aid to get the schools started back up again? Well, you know, people are extremely interested in getting the schools started back up again. CBS is not going to do a poll, I don't think, that would say, do you think you should have to spend money to get schools to open up again? Or are the teachers' unions going to prevent schools from opening up again? For months, when the Republicans start to make some ground on an issue, like why teachers' unions demanded that teachers get vaccinated, and then once the teachers are vaccinated, well, we still can't open the schools because it's not safe. We can't really open till all the kids are vaccinated. It doesn't matter that the kids aren't super spreaders. We're just going to keep schools closed because that's the way we like it. Well, parents aren't so fond of that. So when the Republicans make this an issue, then we get what we all know is the terminology that the reporters love to use. Republicans pounced. Republicans seek to exploit. It's all these terms that make up the warp and the woof of what they call news coverage. There is so much language that's being used here that's meant to subtly drive your opinion. We won't be so dramatic and call it mind control. But it is meant to sway people. And so when you go out and you have conversations with what I call people who are persuadable, I would put it that way. We talk a lot about it, when you're more convinced about everything and you have to go out and talk to people that you call persuadable. Those are the people that the whole fight about media bias are about because... They don't watch news or follow politics as well as other people. And they're more easily swayed. And they might say, yeah, what's wrong with COVID relief? Why are you opposed to COVID relief? And they don't want to hear your 8-minute answer about what's wrong in the 790-page bill. This is sort of the problem, is that the media speaks in shorthand, and especially television. Television's not going to take the time to explain everything that's in the bill. Or if they do, it's described in the most overwhelmingly positive things. The news media will say, well, the Biden plan will take children out of poverty and make the sun come out. I mean, that's, you know, you get that kind of rhetoric. And we also see this, one of our ancient points about media bias, is you also see that in the way that the two sides of policy debates are described. I mean, in the case that the conservative side is actually described. Because let's face it, there's not a lot of Republican arguments being put on. And you generally don't get Republican arguments being put on with a soundbite. There's a lot of times they'll do this sort of thing where they'll say, Republicans object, but the Democrats say they're terrible. You know, you get like a very brief explanation of what the Republican position is, but they're not allowed to speak for themselves. That happens a lot. But our side of the debate is always the Conservative Heritage Foundation, and that's fine because the Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank. But we've always shown people that when you look at news coverage, especially when you look at major newspapers, we've always studied the Washington Post, the New York Times, etc., they're going to describe conservative groups as conservative, at least in 40% of articles, sometimes 60, 65, 70% of articles, they're going to work the word conservative in there to describe who they're talking about. The Family Research Council is going to be described as religious conservatives, and that's not inaccurate. The problem is when we go to the other side, and that is when you get to groups we would describe as liberal. We might even describe them as ultra-liberal. We might describe them as far left, extreme left. When the Ocasio-Cortez faction wants to quote-unquote end fossil fuels, basically saying you better get an electric car now because we're going to ban the fossil fuels. They're not extremists. Green New Deal, they're not extremists. They're not on the far left. They don't even, I mean, they might use the word progressive, which is their word. That's the word they like. Because they're in favor of progress, and their opponents are in favor of regress. This is the terms, but a lot of times, liberal groups are described in non-ideological terms, and in these same fancy terms like bills get described. Civil rights advocates say, gay rights advocates say, public health advocates, pro-environment advocates say. I mean, you could see it. I did a piece this week on HR1 and the way that PolitiFact was going after Mike Pence. They're not going after Kamala Harris. She's the vice president now. But no, we don't mind what she says. Mike Pence wrote a piece for the Daily Signal that has at least 3 fact checks on PolitiFact attacking Mike Pence. And Mike Pence is wrong on this, and Mike Pence is wrong on this, and who are the experts that tell us he's wrong? Oh, it's voting access groups or something. I mean, it's the Brennan Center, the Campaign Legal Center. And the Brennan Center is named after an ultra-liberal Supreme Court Justice, Joseph Brennan. But they just present them as the soul of expertise and objectivity and nonpartisanship, when they're a bunch of leftists. But they are presented simply as the experts. This is the way that the news media twist everything. So when you look at coverage of the COVID relief debate, if you see any stories on the Equality Act debate, they're not going to want to acknowledge there's a debate. If you want to look at stories on expanding voting access, just stay extra aware of the way that the news media uses a lot of terms that always favor the left. This is the kind of thing it's almost too subtle to complain about because it's just in there. It's like the air we breathe when it comes to discussing politics. So, well, that's us, Republicans. They're opposed to air. So we will be back in just a moment.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
And we're back with the Newsbusters podcast. Our interview this week is with MRC business research analyst Joseph Vasquez. We call him Joey. How you doing, Joey?
I'm doing well, Tim. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. We are spending a lot of time in the last couple of days looking at what they call the COVID relief package.
Oh, goodness.
Which I find slightly misleading because, as we know, a lot of it doesn't have to do with the COVID.
No, it does not.
So it is fascinating that the media on one level will say this is about the coronavirus response, and then on the other tout it as the most progressive piece of legislation since the Great Society. So it's kind of weird. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was this Ben Shapiro tweet the other day. Steve Rattner, who's sort of the business analyst of Morning Joe, was doing this usual routine that Democrats do and tried to say that the Trump tax cuts, which they always suggest is a similar size to this package, were overwhelmingly tilted toward the rich. The bottom 20% got next to nothing. So this is kind of what they always say. And Ben Shapiro said what?
Well, Rattner had gone on Twitter to, you know, pretty much to go to bat for President Biden's, you know, stimulus package, as you know. And, you know, he made the allegation, you know, the top 20% of households reaped 65% of benefits from Trump's tax cuts, and the bottom 20% only got 1%. So, of course, you know, you're going to stimulate a lot of anger. Oh, look, the rich are benefiting the most out of, you know, out of Trump's tax cuts. You know, we need to level the playing field a little bit more. But of course, as is always the case with media pundits, context is missing. And Ben Shapiro came in and dropped a clear fact that completely just pretty much just blew up Ratner's narrative. And he quoted his tweet and included a graph. I think it was from the Tax Foundation, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the top 25% of households pay 71% of all federal income taxes. The bottom 50% paid 4%. So that would be why. So here's another side of the story where the top 20-25% of households are paying the majority of federal income taxes, while the bottom 50% are paying nearly nothing, so to speak. But of course, with that kind of context, it blows up the kind of narrative that Rattner was trying to push. Oh, look, you know, the rich are benefiting, the poor are getting nothing. Well, how is the tax distribution? How are the tax rates, you know, decided? Who's paying the most in taxes? That's never addressed. So, of course, everyone is launching all of this hyperbole at the rich. But then, of course, with this new context that Shapiro brings, it brings an entirely different light to the issue, and it completely undercuts him entirely. But this is what the media do. They throw out a very popular talking point with no other mitigating context whatsoever. Really astonishing.
I mean, this has really been the Democratic argument against tax cuts ad infinitum. Certainly going back to Reagan, was always the notion of who benefits and that the distribution is unequal. Well, the tax burden is unequal. That's exactly what Ben is saying. But they always, everything the Democrats do seems to have to be about redistributing wealth downward. And so you do look at this and say, I thought this was a bill about the coronavirus. Obviously, there's a pile of other things in there. It's sort of a, I mean, this is what the Republicans are saying. This is sort of like a progressive wish list. So this turns me to another, what we might call business Democrat in the press, and that is Steven Pearlstein, who's an economics columnist for the Washington Post. He opened up the paper on Sunday, he's clearly a Democrat, a business Democrat, but he started taking after the press. I thought, what kind of democracy dies in darkness moment is this? That he writes, what is equally disappointing to the performance of my colleagues in the media. Rare is the story these days that does not highlight how progressives feel about an issue, with nary a mention of what moderates or business leaders have to say. He's literally saying the centrists, which apparently he's a part of, aren't getting their say. He doesn't really care if the Republicans and the conservatives have a say. But he's basically suggesting, yeah, that the progressives are running this whole show. And then we find out, oh, he's retiring. Well, that would explain the frankness of this piece.
Well, there's this like this scorched earth kind of, kind of outing. In other words, he's not going to be, you know, underneath the Washington Post's oversight anymore. So might as well leave with a parting shot. So, I mean, when I read that specific story, I was really astonished just at the blatant honesty that he used to pretty much showcase the kind of economic thinking that is plaguing the left, the Democrats, and the media in today's culture. And pretty much the crux of this is pretty much what he calls the free lunch era. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, that you can spend however much you want. You can raise the minimum wage to whatever level. You know, we don't have to worry about inflation. We don't need to worry about debt. All those things kind of just go out the window. And this pretty much sounds like you're taking pages out of Paul Krugman's book, Arguing with Zombies. I mean, it literally makes no sense. The idea that you continue to spend and spend and spend and throw money at the problem and think that that's going to solve anything. This is what he calls the free lunch era. And this is what many in the media and the left are adopting. And what Pearlstein correctly points out is that this is all, pretty soon we're going to have to pay the piper at some point. I mean, you can't just, haphazardly go on spending, trillions and trillions of dollars and not think that it's going to catch up with you. I mean, look at the national debt. The national debt is nearing 30, I think it was at $30 trillion, I believe it is, as of right now. I mean, think about it. How long do you think you'll be able to inflate that number before it finally, collapses in and of itself?
But the answer from Democrat land, or what I see on CNN, is they say, well, the Republicans didn't say boo when Trump passed a $2 trillion coronavirus bill. And so I mean, they're always going to try to suggest that the national debt is Republicans can't campaign on that now that the Democrats are in power because they didn't campaign on it before. But one of the things I always say when it comes to deficits and debt, Dick Cheney got in trouble years ago for saying it wasn't really an issue. That was a moment of candor, too, because the reality is most people don't care a lot about that issue. It doesn't really resonate with them. And I always blame the media, Mr. Vasquez. I blame the media because politicians are scared to cut spending on anything because they're afraid of the story where CBS is going to go out and find somebody who's been deprived of their benefits, and they're going to cast the politicians as, evil people who don't want, young children to, have a meal or something. I mean, this is just what they do. It doesn't matter what the spending is on. It can be what we would consider silly spending, like, the old National Endowment for the Arts grants for sculpting with feces. But it's just one of these things that the press never takes its responsibility for the debt. And that's part of what Pearlstein's saying there. So yes, hooray for Steven Pearlstein. But the Post in general, I mean, also on Sunday, they had the way that they were, can you call it report? the way they wrote about the bill here, the headline was Biden stimulus showers money on Americans, sharply cutting poverty and favoring individuals over businesses. You know, they seem to forget whose money that is. You just shout, Biden showers money on Americans like it's his money.
It's their money. It's the taxpayers' money. Like they are pretty much trying to make it seem like this money's coming out of a vacuum somewhere. And I'm like, where do you think it's coming from? The federal government doesn't have money of its own. They have taxpayer dollars. We fund the government. It's pretty much we're showering ourselves with our own money.
Right. I like the way you had written for Newsbusters, the Post treated Biden like a benevolent Santa Claus and said the plan represents one of the most generous expansions of aid to the poor in recent history. This is, again, it's the Democrats and Biden are showering the poor with aid to the poor. It's that kind of just like Super Joe, here he comes, he's going to give everybody money, everybody's going to get expanded food stamps, and the world's going to be a wonderful place.
Well, this goes right back to what Pearlstein said. You know, he said much of what we've been sold on these progressive economic ideas, like raising the national minimum wage to $15 an hour or the $1.9 trillion stimulus package. He said much of what we've been told or sold on these matters are, quote, mindless talking points. His own paper's pushing a mindless talking point. I can't really blame Pearlstein for wanting to leave. I mean, because you read something like that and it just stinks of political advocacy. It doesn't even sound like a paper.
Yeah.
But, you know, the irony of this is that the Washington Post, just a couple of days before that piece was released, undercut its own argument. This is what it said. I think it was on March 4th, it had released a story. Here's the headline. As Senate rushes $1.9 trillion bill through Congress, Biden faces doubts over whether it's still the right package. That was just a couple of days before it now starts saying that Biden is showering Americans with all of this money and whatever. Wait a minute. But you just pretty much just threw into question of whether or not it's even the right bill.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the whole problem with this from the Democrats' political perspective is the economy is starting to do well. And obviously the coronavirus stats are looking good. And so the danger here was, well, we better get our quote unquote COVID relief out the door before COVID goes away. I mean, that's to me what the March 4 story says. And then of course, the more likely it was that the bill would pass, then suddenly it's a good thing, you know? And so we're going to be stuck with this, but the, speaking of talking points, I just wanted to mention something that you wrote about, and that was Washington Post political reporter Philip Bump, I like to call him Bumpy, was tweeting out that the Republicans in the Senate wanted sort of to do the stagecraft of having them read this bill because it's like 790 pages or something. So they were going to read the bill just to sort of give everybody an idea of how long it was. And also you could argue it might give people a chance to see what on earth is in it because our media doesn't cover that. I mean, the newspapers might give you a little bit, but two-minute television stories are not going to tell you what's in it. But Bump tweeted, while the Senate read the coronavirus relief bill, nearly 900 Americans may have died from the virus. I mean, how do we connect those two things? I'm waiting for the so-called independent fact checkers to get involved.
Oh, yeah, the independent fact checkers, right? You know, the PolitiFact, Snopes, you know, the fact check the Babylon Bee. Those are the people that we should be trusting to do our fact checking. Even with what Bump had published, you know, the irony is that he published that story in the same day that the Washington Post had ran its own story questioning if whether or not the $1.9 trillion bill was still the right package. And, you know, he started exploiting or creating this imagery that every minute or every hour or something like that, that goes by and the Senate does not pass this bill, this X number of Americans are dying at this particular rate. So the thing is, if you're looking to stir some sort of emotion, that's the way to do it. But it's not news coverage. It's pure propaganda.
Yeah. This is what I kind of resent is, obviously, there's been an enormous number of Americans lost, 100,000 plus, since Joe Biden was inaugurated. And there's nobody at the Washington Post who's going to put one dead body on Joe Biden at his doorstep. But this is the game that they play. It's the game that they played with Trump all of last year. And that is, whenever the Republicans do something you don't like, people are dying. And you try to connect the two. And there is not a connection in this case. I mean, this is just a reckless, as you say, it's a piece of propaganda. I wanted to turn finally to a couple of things you did on interviews with these left-wing radicals who are proposing a wealth tax. And they're getting some pushback about what they are that they're trying to do. So explain what you've been seeing on that front.
Well, CNBC seems to sort of taken the red pill on this. You know, they had both Senator Elizabeth Warren and also Representative Pramila Jayapal on different days to discuss what they call the ultra millionaire tax. And the one with Joe Kernan was interviewing Warren specifically, and Kernan decided to take a very interesting approach. He started using devil's advocate and said, well, look, if you're going to do a 2% tax on $50 million, and then when you get up to $1 billion, you're going to do a 3% tax. You know, if we've crossed the Rubicon, as Kernan said, why not make it truly progressive and do 10% at $1 billion, or do 20% at $10 million? So in other words, you know, he's pretty much just using Warren's argument against her and saying, well, if your whole point is to be progressive and level the playing field, why not make some real money and make it truly progressive? And you know what her response was? I'm just a girl from Oklahoma. I think $3 trillion actually sounds like a lot of money. She thinks that that her bill is going to bring in $3 trillion in revenue. She says, "Oh, I'm just a girl from Oklahoma. I think $3 trillion actually sounds like a lot of money, and raising $3 trillion, and we can reinvest in our economy." But she didn't even answer the question, you know, and Kernan, you know, caught her off guard and said, you know, Senator, you didn't answer. Why not make it real progressive? Make it 10 times as better. But it's really astonishing, because even after that, when Pramila Jayapal went on CNBC on Squawk Box, and then Andrew Ross Sorkin, the co-anchor, was interviewing her, she was pretty much doing that same sort of dodge whatever question comes your way kind of thing, because one of the talking points that the media and Democrats seem to be pushing is that, oh, you know, it's hard to say that, you know, that it's kind of ridiculous to say that the wealth tax is confiscatory, because it's only, you know, we're only talking about 2%. Yeah. 2% in every dollar exceeding exceeding $50 million or so to speak. It's a very minor percentage. But, you know, Sorkin actually brought to Jayapal's attention, he said this. He said 2% on an annual basis sounds tiny, but over the period of 20 years, or rather 10 years even, I'm quoting directly, we're talking about 20% of wealth, in some cases 30% of wealth. There's a question about whether that unto itself is confiscatory. So in other words, yeah, 2% sounds like a really nice selling point, but when you look at it over the long term, it's really a lot bigger than what Democrats are portraying.
Yeah,
she didn't answer the question.
Yeah, I think what people probably don't understand if they haven't been following this is, yes, this is not a 2% income tax. This is the 2% tax on the wealth that you have, you know, the wealth they can find. I mean, you talk about a bill that's going to cause massive movements of wealth outside the United States, that's what's going to happen. But so what Sorkin and Kernan are saying is basically you're going to take over a 10-year period 20% of somebody's wealth. And that's why it's slightly more controversial, perhaps, than they're allowing. And yes, the dodging is interesting. And I think it sort of underlines why President Biden is nervous, and his staff's definitely nervous about him having to take questions from the press corps, because this whole dodge, this whole "I'm just a little girl from Oklahoma, I wasn't a Harvard law professor" routine is just not going to cut the mustard.
Well, the thing is, look, when the American people hear from our elected leaders, you know, Democrats and Republicans alike, you expect them to know what exactly they're talking about, especially when they're proposing something as radical as a wealth tax. And if they can't even be held up to cross-examining of their own proposal why in the world should the American people trust that they even know what they're doing? So, I mean, so if you can't even answer basic questions about your own proposal, why in the world, number one, should that even be implemented as you're proposing it? Or number two, why should it even be implemented at all if you can't even explain it right?
Joey's now sounding like his own headlines on Newsbusters. Joseph Vasquez destroys! Well, I, Mr. Vasquez, I enjoy having you on, and more power to you. Keep up the good work. We appreciate you. And for everybody, come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day, whatever you can stand, and thanks for listening.